Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us. It's Monday, March 26th, and we mention that each and every week as many of you download these broadcasts and listen to them on your iPad, iPhones, everything out there, and we appreciate you being with us today. We have a special guest with us. All our guests are special. I guess like MBS must be special, so the radio program is. You must be special to be able to be a guest on here. We have Jay Brinkman with us, who is the chief economist for the MBA. We're thrilled to have Jay on, and we'll be getting to him a little bit later in the program, getting an update on everything that's going on in the world of production and what his projections are, talking about HARP, what's the effects of it. Some great information will be coming out a little bit later in the program, so stay tuned all the way through the broadcast. Jay Brinkman will be our special guest today. Also, I want to remind everybody, for those of you that have been listening to the broadcast, you know that we, in the month of February and a little bit into March, we talked about the importance of retaining servicing as a business strategy. For many of you that did not listen to the broadcast, or for those of you that did not, many of you listened, for those of you that did not listen to the broadcast, I encourage you to go to the website, lickenonlending.com, www.lickenonlending.com, download those broadcasts, listen to them. I went back and listened to them. There is so much information in there, so much wisdom that's brought out by our special guests that we had on. Again, they're all special guests, but these guys just really brought forth some great information about retaining servicing and all that is involved in it. So go back and listen to those broadcasts. We appreciate you tuning in each and every week and telling others about us. Each week we get more and more listeners. A special thank you goes out to all of you who are passing the word around about our program. Special note is we got the MBA NewsLink put out a note. So a special thank you to Mike and the crew there at NewsLink, the editor of NewsLink. A special thank you for giving us a shout-out, especially having the guest Jay Brinkman on a little bit later. Let's get over to what's going on in interest rates. Joe Farr, good to have you with
us.
Good
morning.
Hey, Dave. And every week. What's the date? MBS prices. Man, it was a wild last week. But let's talk about that today.
Yeah, start off today. We're about where we ended the week on Friday, but that's off of lows of down 8 this morning, and it was starting out like another ugly day. What turned things around this morning early was Ben Bernanke was giving a speech where it became at least the perception was that QE3 might be more likely, but certainly low rates for a long time. People heard in his speech that he wasn't going to do the things that went wrong during the Great Depression, as he's a student of, and one of those things was to lift up the loosening too soon, too quickly. So the markets did what you would expect when more easing is considered possible. Stocks rallied, MBS prices rallied, gold rallied, and the dollar fell. The Dow's up a little over 100 today. So as has been the case in the past, last week or so anyway, the Fed is the driver of the market.
Nothing has changed. It's what's driving the markets. At least it's not Europe again. So.
Oh, it's nice to have that behind us, isn't it?
A little bit.
No, it's the Fed.
Well, we hope it's behind us.
And the only thing that's come out today so far is the pending home sales. They came out a little disappointing relative to the prior month, but really pretty nice compared to this time last year. It's down a half a point compared to expectations of being up a point, but they are 9.2% above where they were last year this time, so I'm sure Jay will talk some about that.
Yes,
but last week you mentioned volatile. It was terribly volatile. We had a big drop early in the week that was offset by gains later in the week, and ultimately the week wound up about the same place it started. But all this kind of goes back to the Fed meeting on the 13th. of March, where there was a belief in the statement that investors saw less chance of QE3. As a result, MBS prices fell through that week by almost 0.75 points. MBS prices continued to fall the first half of last week by another 20-30 seconds or so, then turned around on Wednesday and recovered that full 20-30 seconds. So we're still worse than where we were after the Fed statement as far as prices go, but we're a whole lot better than where we had been at one point. And, you know, the change occurred on Wednesday when the Fed Chairman Bernanke was given comments, and it was during those comments that people perceived that his study of history and his belief about how the Fed maybe didn't do what they should have during the Great Depression is a clue as to what he might do now. And I'd be curious to hear Jay's comments on this, as the Fed has really been the driver of the market these last week and a half or so.
Yeah, I can't wait for some of Jay's feedback on that. Bookmark that, Jay. We want to come back and talk about that. We've got him on hold in the background. I know he's listening, so we'll make a couple notes about that. So do you see the Fed as a buyer moving forward? What any thoughts on that?
Well, the investor community, especially as it relates directly to mortgage-backed securities, want to see the demand. The added demand gives people comfort in coming in to be a buyer ahead of it, and kind of helps assure that there'll be improved prices going forward. So that's what everyone's looking at as far as the impact on mortgage-backed security prices. Now, the long-term consequence to the Fed easing and ongoing purchases means potential inflation down the road. So I think the investor community sort of looking at the short-term opportunity to pick up prices as there's more demand if the Fed gets into it or stays into it. And then longer term, there'll be the concern about will they prevent the future inflation that will cause those bond prices to go back down?
We've got a busy economic calendar this week, a lot of announcements coming forth. Do you want to run through those for us, Joe?
Well, the announcements, there are a lot of them. Not any of them are terribly significant until we get to Friday and the PCE inflation measure comes out on Friday. And prior to then, durable orders comes out on Wednesday. Lots of little announcements, but those two would be the most significant to pay attention to. Jobless claims has been important of late. And then we got Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, which in the recent past have been market moving. These are the shorter term Treasury auctions, so they might not be as significant to mortgage-backed securities as the 10 and the 30 years would be. But the big events this week should be durable orders on Wednesday and the core PCE on Friday.
Well, we got some things to watch, and folks, you can look at it in MBS Quote Line. If you don't have that service, check it out. You can go there. We're going to learn more about that in just a moment as you listen to this message. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quote Line delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quote Line, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quote Line today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. Appreciate you being there. I forgot to mention at the top of the program, email us those questions with the part of the Profit Doctor. I've got a few questions left over from the last time we talked, and a couple that came in to us after the last show. And so I'm going to lead off with a couple of those. And then if you will text me with some email, or the good way to do it is Twitter me or text me. Many of you are just texting my cell phone, which is 512-632-2900. Again, by cell phone, text me any questions you want me to ask the Prophet Doctor or Jay, for that matter. Text me at 512-632-2900. Prophet Doctor, good to have you on. By the way, everyone's saying, wait, don't you usually have Alice on at this time? Well, guess what? Alice is off teaching, doing what she does best. She's teaching a class today, and we do not have Alice with us. I know many of you are disappointed. I'm always disappointed not to have Alice on to talk about all that's going on in the world of regulatory issues and what's moving down the regulatory highway. So we did a great broadcast on it last week. Alice will be giving you some information and will provide you, again, information. Listen to last week's broadcast if you want to go back and get the latest. There was a lot covered in that, and it was the latest update, and she said there's not a lot happening since then. So the last week's broadcast was the most current. So let's get off into the Prophet Doctor segment. Andy Schell, good to have you with us. Are you ready for some questions from our audience?
Hi, Dave. I am throw away. It's just
throw
bring
away.
It
so the first
can.
We've got a couple questions, two specifically that were going on, and we'll see if some other questions get emailed there or texted in to me here. The number one thing that came out is several people would like to get the Prophet Doctor's thoughts on retaining servicing. And there's a lot of talk about this, and more than one person asked, would love to hear the Prophet Doctor's thoughts on the actual numbers that they can anticipate gaining or giving up, or what is the gains and give-ups in the strategy of retaining servicing. Andy?
Okay, well, that sounds to me like a value proposition question.
Yes,
so,
it does.
As it relates to servicing, and I've said this before on the show, it's like, I'll give you 30 cents for that dollar in your pocket. That's
yep.
what mortgage bankers are doing every day when they release servicing. The value of the servicing is multiples of value more than the cash price getting paid for it today. That's just a fact. That's in dispute.
So let's just dwell on that for a second, Andy, because what you're saying is by them selling that loan away, on a whole loan basis, or at the time when they sell the loan, they sell away the servicing at the same time. You're saying they're getting paid 30 cents when there's actually a dollar of value there. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And
that's
they think
I
they're
heard
getting,
you say, but I want to make sure
getting,
just go, real clear. Go ahead.
Yes, and they think they're getting paid a point and a quarter all the way to 2.25 points because that's what the SRP tables say. But that's not really true. Those SRP
mm-hmm.
tables are adjusted, and they reduce the gain tables by a point or more and increase the SRP tables. So people think, hey, I'm getting a point and a half. I'm getting 2 points for my servicing. If you really do the analysis and compare it back to the security pricing, we've done this for a lot of clients. They're astounded, just amazed that those SRP tables are not truly reflecting the value. And then when you compare what you're really getting paid for the servicing, which in some cases is even less than 20 basis points, and you consider that the cash flow value of the servicing is on the order of a point, even more, you end up in, you start to see that, wow, I'm really not getting paid what the servicing is worth. But all of that said, you know, just because there's a value opportunity doesn't mean that you can immediately take advantage of it. And that's because there's some other elements to this that we need to consider. Now, we got to look at the whole effect that getting into servicing has on the operation. And what's the biggest thing that mortgage companies have to worry about? And that's cash. We've got to have cash to make our payroll. We've got investors slow in purchasing. We've got our cash tied up in loans held for sale. And when you start retaining servicing, there's definitely going to be an impact on cash flow. Now, it's possible to get past that. It's possible to run your organization in such a way that you're able to address this. There's a number of companies that we know of that are doing this very, very well, and just really watch their numbers, watch their money, watch their cash flows, forecast. They're predicting what's going to happen, and they have contingencies in place for all these various permutations that can land on them. And that's what you have to do. If you're gonna, if you came into mortgage banking kind of as a just for lack of a better term, kind of a broker mentality, just make a loan, get rid of it, and that's just kind of the mentality of the firm, you're probably better off not servicing, because it's a discipline that has to be adapted. You don't just jump into it and say, oh, hey, I'm servicing. There's a lot of pieces to this, but if you if you take it seriously and you really understand all the dynamics and really understand the value proposition and why it's a good idea, there can be a significant value improvement for your firm.
That is good. And if for people that want to learn more or want to talk to you specifically about that, they get a hold of you by going or giving you a call at
512-501-2812.
Yes. So, but we got another question. One more. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, they can call you too.
They
at 2810.
2810, they could. Let's get into another question here. I know there's a lot of questions on the servicing, and I'm so glad we're going to have some more. I'm going to get back to a couple more of those next week that have come in. But this is a really important issue. Now, this is a follow-up to the broadcast we had last week. And we're always respectful to all our guests and the various opinions that are out there. But there we had Tony Garitano, who's going to be up next in the segment, talk about the ROI of technology. And one of the people just wrote me and said, want to get Profit Doctor's perspective on ROI on technology. And did you get a chance to listen to last week's broadcast?
Well, Dave, actually, I did. I was able to, my iPhone syncs to iTunes, and I have the Liquid on Lending show scheduled, and it was one of my automatic downloads from iTunes. So all the podcasts show up on my iPhone and my iPad. I just click on it, and it's there. So, yes, I did. I did listen to last week's broadcast.
Well, we have one of our listeners that just might suspect you might have a contrary or a point-counterpoint opinion to that.
Well, my recollection, Dave, and no offense to you or Tony, is that you guys came – my listening to you left me with the impression that it's okay for there to be a fuzziness in the ROI relating to technology because it's just too hard to nail it down. And that was my walkaway. Now, that may not be exactly what you guys said, but that's what I heard. And my counterpoint to that is that I do believe that it's possible to get to a documented and defendable ROI on any technology investment. It's a matter of identifying the variables, and it's a matter of identifying all the factors that are impacted by this and making estimates as to the value those various factors have. Like, for example, what's the value of customer satisfaction? Well, we look at the number of customers, we look at the effect that it has on the market, and we apply some statistics to determine to what extent it would apply back and then apply some values to it. I can assure you that Fortune 500 companies, when they make a technology investment, have a very well detailed technology analysis that includes an ROI number. I can assure you that commercial banks, when they make technology investments, have a very detailed analysis of the impact on the organization, the benefits to the organization, and it drives down to total cost and gets to an ROI. When I was at Bank of America, we did it. When one of the other folks in our firm, very long experience in mortgage, in commercial banking technology, and they always have an ROI assessment. So it's what's done.
Yeah, I think maybe the issue is not so much you disagreeing. It's just going to the extra measure of measuring the ROI is versus, you know, it being fuzzy. If something's fuzzy, you're suggesting people drill into it to discover the ROI.
Well, I don't think we stop at, oh yeah, it's just fuzzy. It's fuzzy,
that's
but
the
you
point.
Drill deeper to make it be clear. You polish the lens.
I think that's
get on some new glasses, you look more. You don't say, oh, it's fuzzy, so we're just going to do it anyway. No, the same thing happens like adding a new branch. I hear mortgage bankers talk about this. Well, we're going to add a new branch, and we really don't know how much money we're going to make, but we're just going to make more volume, so it must be good. And so,
volume, yeah.
You know, this new computer system's a cool thing, so let's just buy it because it looks like it's going to be fun. You know, that's not how you make decisions in business.
That is, you know, the point of it is you need to drill into it, get to the ROI. It may be, in fact, fuzzy to Tony's point for many, but don't let it stay there. Keep drilling. That's good. In fact, I just got a text back, and they said, that's the perspective I wanted to hear. So the person that put that question in just texted me back. I don't know if you heard the chime in the background. Says, great answer. That's how I thought it is. He agrees with Tony, but he really just saying, drill into it. Don't let it be fuzzy. So, and I think it's a CPA. I have a feeling that was probably a CFO drilling in and asking that question. In fact, I know it was. So,
okay.
Andy, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And it's fun
that's
to do
all?
This.
We finally get through.
That's all for right. I'm looking at, we want to get Jay on. There's so much to talk about with what's going on in production.
I'm just
so,
getting warmed up, Dave. I was just getting started.
Well, those were a couple of softballs. We're going to get, we got some hardballs coming at you next week.
Oh,
too.
There you go. Send me a SASB 159 question. I like those. Unrealized gains.
Oh, yeah.
That,
of course, we
want to
keep our list. We want to keep our listeners. We don't want to lose them. We start talking FASB, people will start, you know, they'll go, oh, my God, I don't need to listen to that. Shut it off. Folks, we'll be right back. We appreciate you tuning in, listening to The Profit Doctor. We got Tony Caratano right here after this, and then Jay Brinkman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us again. This is March 26th, Monday. We're excited to have all of you on the listening to the broadcast again. A good, huge audience listening today. Appreciate it by the phone. But also remember, for those of you that are listening over the phone, you can go to the website, Lincoln on Lending, www.lickenonlending.com, and you can listen to it on a streaming basis. We've got several companies that listen to this and make this a part of their weekly staff meeting. They said, I quit doing staff meetings, Dave. I just have everyone come in the room. We turn on the computer in the conference room, hook it up to the speakers, and we'll let everyone has to they stroll in and they listen to the broadcast. It gives us the whole everything we need to know in 1 hour, and it's a great program, and we've got people coming in and listening to it. So thank you to those of you that are doing it. We want to hear how else you guys are listening to it. Love to hear the stories. Each and every week, we have Tony Garitano talking to us about technology. I know your ears are probably burning, Tony. It's good to have you on the program. Just want to make sure you can hear me all right.
I can hear you. Can you hear me, Dave?
No, good. Yes. Appreciate it. Well, I know, is there any immediate feedback to the comment? I knew I got some feedback right after our last segment about going on the challenge, our perspective on the ROI, Tony. And I think it was really good what Andy was really trying to say is it is fuzzy for many people. Don't let it stay fuzzy is, I think, really the message in that. You know, if your thoughts before we go to a couple other issues?
I agree with Andy. I think that, you know, in every possible case, you need to come up with an ROI number. I wasn't suggesting necessarily that lenders just buy technology because it's cool. However, yeah. You know, I would say to Andy and to your listeners that there are new technologies that are always emerging. There are technologies that are used in other spaces that the mortgage industry has been reluctant to embrace that have intangible ROIs that should also be considered in addition to coming up with numbers. I mean, I know Andy's a CPA, so he likes numbers.
Yes, he does.
And certainly every lender should look at the numbers, but, you know, for example, if there's a technology that can keep you in compliance with a given rule, that may actually cost you more money to acquire that technology, but the return on investment from getting fined or from ending up in the newspaper, you know, that's an intangible. I mean, you can't put a number around that.
And I think those are some of the issues that are there. I will continue that discussion. In fact, we may make next week that topic, just going back into it, because I think it's one that we want to really drill into further. I think it's a great topic. And of all the things we've talked about, Tony, on the radio with you, that drew some of more feedback. It was all positive. They love the topics, and they're going, I'm so glad you have a technology component to your broadcast. a lot of people are talking more and more about LinkedIn. And does it really increase sales? Any thoughts on that? Another way to question it, can it increase sales?
I think it can, Dave. I'm going to throw out some intangibles, so maybe that, you know, may not make everybody happy. But I think that, you know, there are 145 million registered members on LinkedIn as of 2011. That's up 60% from the previous year. So there are a lot of people on LinkedIn. And if you use LinkedIn well, it can get you greater visibility. You add connections, you increase the likelihood that those people will see your profile and come back to you. It also enhances your search engine results. You can publicize your blog. You can publicize your website. And, you know, that should get you some hard numbers there in that you should be able to see the web traffic increase as a result of your presence on LinkedIn and whether you're updating it and commenting. You can also do things like track startups. You know, you can see people in your network who are initiating new startups by doing a search, and that can tell you, well, you know, maybe there are a lot of people starting e-signing companies. I shouldn't start mine. Or maybe there aren't very many people starting e-signing companies. You know, maybe that's something that I should look into. And you can also ask for advice. I mean, I always find that when I'm doing something, I need sounding boards, Dave. I mean, I'm always doubting myself, and I'm always trying to get outside opinions, and I think that LinkedIn can be a good place for that as well. So I think that there are a lot of tangible and intangible ways that you can drive revenue and traffic to your company and to your website through LinkedIn if you're doing it well.
Well, we certainly have had tremendous success with the discussion group that we launched, the LO Compensation and New Rules. It has now over 4,300 members, and the activity on that board is just unbelievable. And so a lot of activity. You'd think that issue might have died down again, but it hasn't. It just continues to go on and on. I appreciate that so much. I'd love to get into, I'm looking at the clock, Tony, so I want to get into if we can continue the LinkedIn discussion, because a lot of people are, I got several texts and I got several questions that came in on LinkedIn. So if we could continue the LinkedIn discussion next week, there's a lot of people wanting to learn how to use it more effectively, and they're saying, Tony, what are some tips on how to use it? So if you can, as we depart on your segment, give us a quick tip. What's the number one recommendation, first, other than getting signed up and using it, what's the number one recommendation you have? And let's talk about it more next week.
The number one recommendation that I have, Dave, is to regularly send out updates. Don't just go there, sign up, fill out your profile, and think it's going to generate business for you. You have to actually interact and send some updates. Let people know what you're thinking.
Tony, we appreciate you being with us each and every week, and look forward to continuing discussion next week. Appreciate it. Have a great week, Tony.
Thanks, Dave.
Talk to you in a minute. Well, folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back. Appreciate it. By the way, I'm really impressed with the feedback we got. There was a lot of folks wanting to learn more about LinkedIn, and then the whole topic of ROI, the return on investment related to technology. So we're going to come back on that one quite a bit more. So stay tuned to future broadcasts, because we're getting a lot of questions in on that. And so they got some questions that are the buyers that are not CPAs that are saying, how can you get to this number? And we have others going, great point. The more the CPA types, the CFO types are writing me right now and saying, absolutely, you can get to a number. So we're going to want to stay tuned. We're going to get into that topic a whole lot more. Each and every week, we have a special guest on the radio program, and today is no exception, someone that's familiar to all of you. If you've been to any of the MBA conferences, you've no doubt heard Jay Brinkman speak. Jay is the chief economist and senior vice president of research and education there at the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. And by the way, if you're not a member of the MBA, you really need to consider a membership. You should be. It's just like if there was ever a time in our industry where the MBA plays a significant role. It's always played a significant role, but I don't think there's ever been a time where its importance in the marketplace is more punctuated than right now. Get involved, get signed up, and become a member. That's my free ad on that, and Jay can add to that. And by the way, he didn't ask me to put that out there because to have him on. That was just our convictions. We really strongly support the MBA and what they're doing. All of Jay's responsibilities include economic forecasting, mortgage industry analysis, measuring mortgage industry profitability. That's one of the favorite topics of Andy Schell. Also overseeing the industry technology standards and the MBA's education programs. Jay has a PhD from Purdue University and an MBA from Tulane University. Jay, good to have you on the broadcast. Appreciate you being with us.
Dave, thanks so much for having me.
Jay, you're always bringing us so much good information. You always do it in a way which is not only interesting and informative, but it's also oftentimes just so wonderfully colorful and entertaining. I appreciate your commentary. Thank you so much for willing to be a guest on us. You recently revised some of the production numbers and from last year, and is this end of is out, a lot of people are asking us, and some questions that came in anticipation of you being here is ask Jay if this is the last refinance wave. And with the rates being this low, with HARP, is this the last refinance wave?
Well, one could have a career in predicting the end of refinance waves, but if you look at the long picture, with the industry's really benefited by rates coming down really since the early 1980s, that while there have been times where it's blipped up, we've really have come down from that level as we've gotten inflation out of the economy. But rates, I think, are now at bottom, and we're starting this climb back up. Now, I actually thought we had started it last year, maybe we would have, or the year before, without the intervention by the Federal Reserve at the long end, but absent that intervention, I think we would already be in a place where rates would be going steadily up over at least the next decade or so. And so we won't have the big rate drops that would drive a major wave. We may have just normal blips where it would come down and you'd have refi opportunities for the previous year, year and a half's production. But I don't see that we're going to see the kind of mass refis that we've experienced certainly last decade or the last couple of years.
Government intervention is a huge issue, and we've seen it front and center. Would love to I want to get in specifically into HARP, but just generally, what are your thoughts on all the government interventions? Any thoughts and opinions you want to share with our audience? Because as we get into this election, there's a lot of people that have pretty strong opinions on this. What's your thoughts?
Well, I guess I have a number of opinions, and I'm more of a government minimalist than a strong interventionist in many ways.
I knew.
So I'll talk about HARP in a minute, but one of the questions I guess that came up earlier was on Fed policy and Bernanke's comments about possibly going with a QE3. I think that may be something that just keeps getting dangled out in the market as opposed to anything they actually do, because there is real opposition within the Fed to going with another program. But I think Bernanke is, I don't want to call him wrong or mistaken, but I think it's not necessarily correct to say that because the Federal Reserve made mistakes back in the 1930s, that sort of absolves you from the possibility of making your own brand new mistakes right now. I mean, let's face it, everyone acknowledges, I guess, that prohibition was a mistake, but we're certainly not handing out free booze on street corners everywhere, that there's a way to overreact to mistakes. And really what we're looking at is what they're doing has never been done before. It's an experimental drug program, and you're looking at it as, well, will the effects in some way be worse than the disease that they're trying to cure? Because they're holding down rates at a time of record federal deficits, unprecedented increases in the federal debt. You put on top of that what the states are facing in terms of their shortfalls, entitlement programs, pension fund shortfalls. All of these point toward major, major issues the country is going to be facing in a few years, and in a sense saying, well, let's relieve the pain right now by keeping some of these long-term rates down. I just think it is increasing the pain that we're going to eventually feel.
There's no question. I sometimes wonder with him, with Bernanke specifically, managing Fed policy based on to avoid the mistakes that were made in the last Great Depression. Hopefully we won't have another one, but you almost wonder if we couldn't head over into another ditch on the other side of the road. So that is the slippery slope that, you know, there's ditches seems like on both sides of this, and it seems like a very narrow highway, and we seem to go from one to the other. Let's talk about HARP. What about HARP? I mean, do you see this having the negative impact on all to end all future refinance waves other than for, you know, a home improvement or a wedding or financing education, pull equity out for something like that? Other than that, is HARP the death knell here?
Here's what we're saying with HARP, MBA, since I guess we started about the first of the year for MBA members that are producing loans, originating loans, we can now do state-level applications reports on a month-to-month basis. So what's going on with refis, what's going on with purchases, FHA share, loan size, all the kind of metrics you'd expect for a market that we used to do on just a national basis. But when we looked at it, refis are up, for example, in February over January by about 10%. But when we started digging through the numbers, what we found was that, well, Florida was up 49%, Arizona up 61%, and Nevada was up 71% in that period. So it's clear that the states that had the biggest problems with home equity, that's where people now have jumped in to start taking advantage of the HARP program. And I think that's keeping the refi numbers sort of artificially high, that the non-HARP refis have been responding to just burnout. The increases in rates, those have been falling, but HARP's going to keep that up there for a while. What that means then is that these owners will be locked into high LTV loans. They're not going to be able to move. They're at a low rate, so there's not going to be a refi incentive. So the extension risk, but it's a very long duration asset now, longer than sort of some of the other ones with the prepay speeds associated with just the normal security being issued at that, you're just not going to see either the mobility or the prepays that would cause some sort of either refis or just maturity in those loans. Yeah. So, when we look at other states, no change in Texas. Colorado's
no
down.
Change.
This is
yeah.
refis. Connecticut was unchanged, so it really is a HARP story right now in refis.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Jay, this is Joe. Throughout history, we've had several refis, some of which weren't necessarily due to rate reduction. You know, there was an opportunity for a good number of cash-out refis, and with the tightening of the underwriting guidelines and all that we've been through, do you see that playing a role in the amount of business that we might have available on a refi from a refi perspective for many years to come?
I think the cash out refis are going to be much more limited than what we've seen in the past. First, because the appreciation is going to be much more limited in certain markets. Part of the appreciation, of course, was always reflecting reduced rates to the extent that would then get capitalized into home values. Those values then would be passed over into the refi business as well as purchases. But I think we're going to see large parts of the country where we simply don't see that kind of increase because the regulations are going to be holding back the availability of mortgages. As we're sitting here looking at what's going on with the QRM, with the QM, with the restrictions on what down payments are going to be necessary, we're just going to be holding down demand that we would have seen in the past for the same demographic situation. So I've always thought that it wasn't so much interest rates that drove home purchases. It was the second baby that came along and you only had one bedroom. That was when someone decided to buy a house, not necessarily what interest rates are. But now what we're seeing is that second baby comes along. If you're not where you need to be in terms of a down payment, you're going to be in that apartment just a little while longer than before.
Well, hey, Jay, it's Andy Schell. Yeah, great to have you on the show. I have a question that everybody wants to know. This is the question that the entire listening audience right now is just waiting to hear, and that is, how is the purchase market shaping up? What's it going to be like? What's the spring and summer buying season going to be? Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? What's going to happen?
Great question.
the answer to that is yes. All of the above. Part of it is going to be where you are. So what are we reading through our early numbers? I'd say year to date, we're down still about 6% or so from where we were last year. A couple of good signs. One is that average loan sizes are the highest that we've seen since back in 2010. So there's a pickup there with the just number of applications that we're seeing. Again, a bit of a state mix. Early on, we've seen Michigan, Illinois, and Ohio with some of the biggest increases in purchase apps. Some of the rest of the country was either flat or down. Florida's down 16% over the previous year. Georgia's down. Texas up a little bit. So that we are, at the moment, forecasting sort of the second and third quarter purchase apps running about $220 billion and about $412 billion for the year. That level really puts us back to a period in the early 1990s, roughly 1992, 93. So definitely not a great year in purchases, very much like what we saw last year. Why I'm hoping I'm wrong, it really is three factors. And so I'm hinging my optimism at the moment on these three factors. One is that we follow a survey put out by Kingsley Associates on rental. It's a rental index, and it says, "What is how likely are you to renew your lease?" And that number now is at its lowest point since back in 2008, at the really the beginning of the recession. So that renters who have been in apartments are saying, first of all, the rents are going up. We get the NOI and rent numbers from a large number of apartments and reports that are generated around the country, and across the board, they are taking advantage of the increase in rental demand to increase rents. People are responding now to those rental increases by saying maybe now is the time to buy. I think a second thing is the increase in interest rates that we're seeing may cause some fence sitters to jump, to say, well, I figured I had plenty of time, home prices weren't going up, interest rates weren't going up. Wait a second, now there's some indication rates are moving up. Maybe now I ought to think about it. And a third fact to keep in mind is that this run-up in the stock market has increased the value of 401k programs. And people can tap those programs for a down payment. So I think essentially the run-up in the stock market has increased some of the money now available for down payment, and that might take care of one of the hurdles in getting people in. So We may, in fact, see a somewhat better market than what our models point to right now.
Well, I was wondering about what could go right to make the market better. You just listed out three things. What are the things that could make it be not as strong as we're hoping?
Oh, let's see. I'd say number one would be gas prices. You start getting up too high on gas prices, that certainly decreases demand for some of the outlying suburbs. That concern getting built into the people's budgets. If we do end up with some sort of situation in the Middle East, whether it is an attack on Iran, blocking the Hormuz, anything that increases international uncertainty, that then causes people to sit back. They pay attention to the news, it creates great economic uncertainty. So I think at the moment it's going to be a combination of what happens with gas prices and what happens in the international climate. I don't think that Europe is completely settled right now, but I think at this point, if we see more burnings and riots in Greece and elsewhere, that's necessarily going to have a negative impact on us. But I would be concerned at a big negative development in the Middle East.
Jay, this is Joe. One element that you didn't mention there, and maybe it's because it's so late in the year, but any thoughts about whether one side or the other takes control of Congress and wins the presidential elections?
I think the election will have an impact on business growth. I think that will have more of an impact on the economy with some expectations on tax policy, expectations of what the eventual cost of the healthcare program could be on businesses and employment growth. I don't think, though, in the near term that's going to be impacting home purchases this year. I don't think that people would necessarily have made that connection. Thinking through it, there are obviously some issues with what the president's pronouncements have been on his dislike of the mortgage interest deduction for people above certain salary levels, but then he's made a number of pronouncements negative concerning people above certain income levels. So it might be a little hard just to isolate that one out, but I don't think that will be sufficient to impact any purchase decisions this year.
One of the issues that we were talking about before the broadcast, when we were visiting just before I went on air, was liquidity. I mean, Joe raised that as a great question. I'd love to get your thoughts. Is there any concerns for liquidity from a warehouse standpoint, from a correspondent lending, for those that are going to be originating product? What's your thoughts on that?
We've lost several of the large institutions that were big correspondent buyers that have pulled out, and so that part of the market is definitely tighter. We are seeing a growth in a number of smaller players wanting to step in, and it's always a question, and it has to do with the structure of the entire banking community right now. When you have fewer large banks, to what extent can the smaller institutions, the regional players, step up and replace that volume? And I think it's a combination of building the systems, getting the pricing right, and I think we saw a parallel to this certainly with warehouse lending, several years ago some of the warehouse lenders pulled out, and it was a matter of time and getting the right price until we got replacement supply building into the market. And I think that we'll see that here, because fundamentally in the mortgage business, your biggest cost is acquiring that customer.
Yes.
And very difficult for an institution to do that, and you've got to be able to, if you want to get the volumes through, is still rely on a correspondent market. And if you think about it, there are a number of banks sitting out there today saying, you know, I've never particularly liked the mortgage business because of all the regulations, the cyclicality and everything else, but right now I've got no other loan demand. If I can put some money to work with a warehouse line, if I can put some money at work buying up some of these correspondent loans and seeing what I might want to hold in portfolio or sell back on, that's at least better than putting my money into government securities because I have no place else to loan money these days.
Right. I think we're seeing some trends that are encouraging on that, and we got the upcoming secondary marketing conference. Let's let everyone know when those dates are. Jay, I'm scrambling to look for it. I think it's coming up in May in New York. Do you have those dates in front of you?
As I flip to my calendar... I believe that is May 6th through May 9th.
That's what I believe.
And in
that's
fact,
correct.
I believe they probably made the mistake and accepted my advice, in which I said, why don't we have a speed dating type of deal with correspondents and people who want to meet correspondents? We're not going to quite do it that way, but we are going to have at least one session to try and bring those who need some outlets and those that are looking to buy loans together at that meeting.
I think it's a great. I think that speed dating. I love that idea of bringing people together.
Yeah, they're not going to let me ring a bell every 5 minutes and make people change seats, but.
A trade was done over there in the corner. We've got to win. So, I mean, $42 billion was just traded over here. Who do we have? It's running it like an auction. But, you know, we've got some great speakers coming up for that conference, Jay. I was really encouraged. I know Norm was working on this, Norm Edwards, who does a lot of the scheduling the speakers. But if I read correctly, you have confirmed that Lou Ranieri will be speaking at this conference.
The one negative is that Jay Brinkman is still on the agenda, so I think that's always the low spot of the conference.
It's one of the better parts of it. If you have not heard Jay speak at one of these conferences, you've got to get there. Oh, I've got so many great quotes from Jay. And then Doug Duncan, who is a very big fan of Jay's, used to work with Jay, is also, we get together for dinner, Doug and I, and we just laugh over just Jay Brinkman quotes there. So some great stuff. Let's look at the outlook for the company profitability. Any forecast? What's your thoughts on what are the various lenders out there can anticipate in profitability for this year and moving looking forward?
Well, we think we finished last year, fourth quarter, pretty much where we were for the third quarter. We put out our quarterly profitability report, and probably at about 60 bips net, down maybe from 65, 66 the previous quarter. And to the extent the volumes continue to go through, I think we will see some of that hold up through the first quarter now, as well as gain on sales still being fairly strong. The concern is always is with the volume drop, the ability of the mortgage industry to handle the fixed costs associated with originating mortgages with lower volume. And unfortunately, I think the industry is going to be going through a period now where you've got these irreducible fixed costs, much more so than the last big volume drop. Because when you look at what are my fixed costs of compliance, what are my fixed costs of dealing with fraud checks, what are my fixed costs right on down the line? That is now the hurdle of being in this business, and to what extent can I support those costs against the reduced volume? Offsetting that, though, I think that the competition, and we don't necessarily see the same drive to bargain basement pricing that we saw perhaps in the last decade, and I think that'll help hold up profitability somewhat.
It's encouraging to hear. So how did people finish the year off, and what are you seeing for 2012? Kind of as we get close to wrapping up this segment, I want to get it back to Joe and Andy here in just a minute, but how do you see people finishing up the year, and what are you seeing, any early predictions for the rest of 2012?
I'm sorry, Dave, that's for me?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes, for you.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I wasn't real clear.
First half of 12, I think, is going to look good. I think things are going to be very problematical as we get into the second half of 12 with the lower volumes. That will have sort of wrung the rest of the life out of the refi program, and that's when I think we're going to start seeing real contraction and concentration on cost reduction.
Let's get back to what I was trying to say, and sorry for the confusion. As I said, I want Joe and Andy, I want to open up a question for each of them. Andy, do you have a question as we get close to wrapping up this segment for Jay?
Well, I mean, just what we've already been talking about, are we past the bottom? Dave was on Fox, and he kept talking about, we're getting close, we're almost there. I can kind of see it sneaking its head around the corner. We're almost at the bottom, but then B of A goes into landlordship. Where's the bottom? Somebody, show me the beef. Where's the bottom?
Well, I probably shouldn't repeat this, which means I will. I told Dave he knows that it's like standing behind the bleachers at a high school football game, that you look up, and depending on where you're standing, you're going to see a different group of bottoms. That it's different bottoms all over the country. Some markets have already bottomed out. Others were far from it. Keep this number in mind. We are about halfway there, back to sort of normal delinquency levels from the peak at the height of the recession to where we think the new normal is going to be in terms of delinquencies, in terms of foreclosure starts. The only number that's still going up is loans in foreclosure, and that's only in states that have judicial foreclosure systems. Everybody else is falling. If you look at, if you want to win a bar bet, ask somebody who's got a higher percentage of loans in foreclosure, California or Kentucky, or Arizona or Delaware, and the answer is Arizona's lower, California's lower, because those are non-judicial states. They're moving the properties through. It's states like Connecticut, New York, Maine, Ohio. These judicial systems are
wow.
holding up sort of a getting to a bottom there. And we're trying to point to that, to the extent to which government's actually interfering with the recovery, because it's clearly making the problem worse in those states.
Joe, you got a question here, right, as we go to the door?
Yeah, real quick, principal reductions. Are we going to see more forced principal reductions? And I know MBA is pretty much on the position that shouldn't be something that we do, but what are your thoughts on those?
I hope that we don't see any forced principal reductions. We're certainly going to see some coming about as the settlement of the five institutions with the state AGs. But the long-term problems of principal reductions, of saying that now you as a lender will have to be responsible for a change in the value of that house, what does that do to your willingness to lend in an area that's subject to high price volatility? What does that do to the possibility of being gamed by the borrower if they know something that's going to take place to potentially have the price drop? Does that then give you the right as a lender to veto building a subdivision next door to where your loan is? There are just any number of problems that this opens up for a short-term gain that I don't think is really there. I don't think that principal reductions would really solve the problem now, and it would address a problem only in very few states that had the big price reductions, but it would end up in mortgage rates, credit spreads going up for the entire country.
You know, I sit and listen to you, and there's a couple of walkaways from here. I'm so thrilled. I enjoy you at many levels, both just for your knowledge, your expertise, the leadership you bring to our industry, Jay, and I'm so grateful for all of that, but also just to learn that you are for minimal government intervention. That just echoes the point of, I agree with that so much, and hopefully we'll see that being the case, because we've been trending the other way to walk away. Also, the fact that, you know, just what are the various factors? There's so much information. For those of you that listen to this broadcast today, you can go down and download it. You should be getting those talking points. The three things that can drive it up, the three things that can drive it down, very, very important. Jay, appreciate you being with us again this week, and look forward to having you back on. Anytime you have something you want to share, please see this as a venue to get the word out. We're thrilled to have you here. Be with us. Thank you so much, Jay.
Thank you for the opportunity. Talk to you next time.
Look forward to it. Folks, we appreciate you tuning in and listening each and every week. Next week, we have a special broadcast. Jay talked about, you know, some people that are coming into the markets. Next week, we have Kevin Stitt, who's president of Gateway Mortgage Group. You no doubt saw a notice or an article get published in the National Mortgage News. Kevin started a correspondent lending group. So there's a new trend of new companies coming into it. We're going to have Kevin come on and talk to us about the correspondent lending program that they've just launched, and learn all we can about it. Again, we've also had New Penn Financial on as a guest. They're out there in the market in the non-conforming side of it. I think what Kevin, and we're going to learn more about this, he's going to be on the conforming side of it. So really looking forward to having him on next week. Folks, let's see here, Andy and Joe, any parting comments as we get ready to wrap up this program?
Well, I'd like to comment that Jay made about the bottom is depending on where you're sitting. And certainly in driving around Texas and driving around Austin, there's booming. I mean, you can't even drive around downtown Austin without running into construction. So obviously there's parts of the country that are doing real well, and I think it's going to be optimistic for mortgage banking moving forward.
Joe?
Just an update on the market. We're pretty much holding where we started the hour, and our prices are just about where they ended Friday.
Yeah,
It is always good to have you bring us that last report here in the last few moments of that. Folks, stay tuned, or I mean, tell your others about it. Don't stay tuned. We're wrapping up this program. If you stay tuned, you're going to hear some dead air. But we want to say thank you for tuning in this week. Looking forward to having you back next week. Appreciate you being a part of the broadcast each and every week. And look forward to having you back next week. Have a great week, everyone.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.